It's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Mahan joining us this afternoon. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Rich. Hello, Carrie. How are we all doing?
Wonderful, thank you. And you?
I'm good. I'm here at the store. I've temporarily closed the store, so sorry to anybody. You're all hoping to get in here, but yeah, I'm still lamenting to Eric today, and things are good. Things are good. A lot of people coming in from out of state, and they're all very nice and very pleasant, and they're all vaccinated, so it's all good.
Like that a lot.
They are.
Excellent. Were yeah. your ears burning a while ago? A friend of yours was here in studio with us, Mr. Speckhart.
Oh, gosh. Did you lose a bet?
Maybe, yeah.
What was he holding forth on? The pitching travails of Major League Baseball?
We
Subarus.
We talked about that. We talked to Subarus. We talked radio, and we talked about you.
Oh, jeez. Well, I think I'm on his good side, so that couldn't have been that bad.
Well, he said you fed him, so that always helps.
Yeah, I try to, you know, we keep each other happy through the use of quality food and booze. He's also, he and his wife are tremendously kind to my children. And so anybody who's kind to them always has my eternal love and appreciation. But yeah, he's a very old friend of my wife's, and one of the first people I met when I moved up here. My first experience Candlepin bowling was with Pat's.
Wow. Well, there you go. Well, Pat's looking good. He's got a beard for the ages there.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Yeah, for a long time, he was, when I met him, he was rocking a beard, and then he went foolishly, no beard, because you have to shave. And I think he remembered that when you grow a beard, shaving becomes far more optional, which is tremendous. Carrie's get it. Carrie gets it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mine never got as magnificent as Pat's has. He has
his is substantial.
Yeah. He's a couple years away from playing Santa Claus, to be honest.
He could. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. He's got this sort of warrior paladin thing going for him. Kind of grizzled. I like it. Yeah, well, cool. So, well, hopefully you guys treated me well verbally. That's
of course, good. We always do.
I hope everybody out there is well. I hope all you dads out there, by the way, had a nice Father's Day. I had a good laugh with several of my father friends that when we noted that we all kind of basically do exactly what we do on any other given day during Father's Day, but nice nonetheless. And the handmade cards always help. I hope those never stop. I'm sure they will. That's always sweet. So we gotta hit a couple countries today. I'll just dive right in. We talked a little bit about Germany today. I want to talk about parts of Germany or parts of Europe that are Germanic in nature and certainly have been closely associated politically as well as winemaking wise with Germany, and that's Austria and Hungary. Now, both of these countries have obviously not been very open to the Western wine world. Hungary, for obviously communist bloc reasons, more than anything else, which puts it very much akin to, say, Portugal, in terms of having a lot of indigenous varieties that just didn't make it here for a while. And Austria, frankly, because they didn't make much and they didn't have a lot of importers going into Austria and bringing out quality stuff. Austria, we'll tackle that first. The majority of Austria's wine regions are obviously located along the Danube, the Donau in German. An incredibly important river, obviously flows through many, many countries, including, we'll talk about it with Hungary as well. It is one of the only countries in the world where you have like vines right up into like a vital active city center. So if you go into Vienna, you can see, like, there's vineyards that creep up right basically to the city. Although I would argue that that's not the more important part of you know, Viennese wine. The more important part, probably, I would say, is the region of the Wagram, which is more interesting geologically, a huge combination of subsoils because of mountains basically crashing into each other. Obviously, the main grapes to keep in mind for Austria, your main white is Grüner Veltliner, which wonderful acidity, can have a little bit of herbaceousness sometimes, can have bright citrus qualities. The main red grape, I would say, is probably Zweigelt in terms of popularity. Zweigelt, very akin kind of to France's Gamay in terms of lightness, freshness, strawberry. It's never really made into wines that are very, very serious per se, but they are seriously delightful and can, you know, take a chill. You also have several other grapes that are slightly less important, but Riesling is really the one that is now taking on some of the most serious vineyard land, and especially, you know, higher altitude, and you are getting just a tremendously good minerally style of Riesling that's coming out of that part of the world. So lots more to explore, obviously, for anybody who's interested in Hungarian wines, but that's sort of a brief overview. Now, our wine of the month, we have a wine club, folks, by the way, in case anybody wants to get in on that, and we are doing Hungarian wine, because one of my distributors that deals in kind of higher quality, smaller production of wines just picked up a portfolio. And again, this is portfolios of Hungarian wines, and not like, oh yeah, like everybody has them, right? Like it's a specific thing. This particular woman, Athena Bocanis, was a lawyer and happened to be in that part of the world enjoying those wines, and basically wondered why no one's bringing them into the U.S. So she started. Hungarian wines, obviously, as I mentioned before, were not part of our lives, especially because they were part of the communist bloc, and a lot of the wines that were being made in Hungary and other parts of that were mass-produced junk. High yield, not interesting, you know, made for consumption and little else. But that's a shame, because Hungary is extraordinarily versatile in terms of topography, in terms of terroirs, micro-terroirs, going, you know, from what is the world's oldest delimited classified area, which is Tokaj, which is in the northeast, and very cool weather up there, up near the Ukraine, going all the way, I mean, the wine region stretch from west to east and also north to south, so you get down to where, like, regions like Zexard, which is where our rosé hails from this month, and it's very warm down there. The primary grapes here are certainly harder to pronounce, certainly for me, and for anybody else who has not had a lot of familiarity with these wines. Ferment, F-U-R-M-I-N-T, is the main white varietal, not only in dry white wines, where it has, you know, real, you know, bracing acidity and lively characteristics, but it's also the grape in Tokaj. And for those of you who don't know what Tokaj is, Tokaj is a dessert wine. It is one of the regions where botrytis, that form of what we call noble rot, exists very easily. So that is, it is a botrytized dessert wine that is extraordinary. It was considered at one time, you know, the wine of kings, the real wine of kings. Of course, I have in all my years, I've heard that a lot. So I'm pretty sure every single wine region at one point was the favorite of a king somewhere, and therefore they were the wine of kings, plural. But anyway, it's a pretty darn good wine, and so I get why it is. So yeah, Hungarian wines, and the rosé I was mentioning, Frankos, which is a grape that you do see in Austria and some other places, but it's not highly regarded there, whereas in Eastern Europe it's referred to, much as wine of the kings, it's referred to as the Pinot Noir of Eastern Europe. And indeed, it makes, you know, it shows a lot of promise, as does actual Pinot Noir, which is our other wine in the Wine of the Month Club. So yeah, Austria, Hungary, making some tremendously good wines.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that Hungarian rosé I got last week was great.
That's the one. That's Czech Franco. So there we go. Yeah, it's tremendous, and the staff loves it. People love it, and I think it's fantastic. Because frankly, I mean, it's just been off the radar, and it's one of these places, just like South Africa, other places like that. It's, you know, this new wine region to us, which is hundreds of years old. You know, so it's a real treat to be able to offer not just one, but several, you know, quality wines from there. So come on in and check those out. And we are, again, just to reiterate, folks, for our mask policy currently, if you are fully vaccinated, you are not required to wear a mask. If you are fully vaccinated, if you are not fully vaccinated, please continue to wear a mask. We do appreciate it. And keep admonishing your friends and neighbors, go get vaccinated. We can all be done with this.
There you go.
Aside from that, I'll talk to you all next week.
Destination Downtown Bangor tonight?
That's right. We have Representative Laura Supica of Bangor, a former staff member here at Bangor Wine and Cheese, who left such silly things to do some serious work down in Augusta. Of course, depending on how you view politicians, maybe you feel differently about that. But Laura is a dear friend and has her eye out for all of us here in Bangor. So we'll be talking to her 6 o'clock.
Excellent. We'll be tuned in. Thanks, Eric. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you. Cheers.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor.